I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
I'm glad to be with you again.
I know we've touched on this several times in the past, and I think I probably know your views already. However, perhaps you could just recap your thoughts as to whether or not investors should engage a property manager for their commercial investments.
You're right, Ken. I mean, look, I always believe, and I personally with my properties have a commercial property manager involved. I just want to know that all the trains are going to run on time. And, you know, the first thing is you want to, the property manager ensures that your property remains leased to good tenants and that those tenants pay their rent by the due date. Now, that's what their prime role, and most people think that's the only role they play. But if you've got a good commercial property manager, they will treat your property as though it were their own. And that's the sort of mindset that you want. You know, that they're going to make sure all the maintenance is undertaken by reliable tradespeople. And sure, the tenant may be responsible for that. But most tenants don't want to organise it. They'll have the managing agent organise it and bill them for the rectification work that needs to be done, whether it's inside the premises, repairs, or something that might be on the outside, like the door, front door doesn't open properly. Now, some tenants, I mean, industrial properties, quite often they'll just fix the things themselves. But when you get into offices, they tend to call upon the property manager to organise that. So you want to be notified well before a tenant intends to vacate, as the lease gets to the end, there's an exercise of option. You know, if the tenant has any suggestion that the tenant's going to leave, you want to know about it, and then also know that every step is taken to either keep the tenant or re-let the property. So, you know, and part and parcel of that is making sure your rents are reviewed on time and at the appropriate level to reflect a fair market rent. So there's a whole host of things that a good property manager will do, which means that you don't have to physically be looking over your shoulder the whole time. And you can go overseas, travel, whatever, as long as they can catch you by phone or email. If there's an emergency, which is unlikely with commercial property, but it should there be, that you can just give direction knowing that they can think on their feet and look after your best interests.
So what you're saying is there's more to property management than merely collecting the rent.
Precisely. But it goes even further than that. I mean, I've just covered some of the housekeeping issues that happen on a day-to-day basis, but a good property manager takes a strategic point of view and looking, as I said, maintaining full occupancy for you. And that all starts by selecting the right tenant up front. Now, sometimes you might inherit a tenant, but if it falls vacant during the period of your ownership, you want to know that your property manager is not just filling the space, but they're selecting the tenant well and developing an ongoing relationship with the tenant. And that sort of leads into the next one, that as investors, you need to think of your tenants as being your partners. I mean, after all, they're the ones that are effectively paying your mortgage. And so top property managers tend to act as though, as I said, the property is their own. And this attitude flows through to your tradespeople, because as soon as you pay your tradespeople on time, you are in the good book. So if an emergency arises, they'll drop things and always attend to your particular job. And so that's one of the questions you can ask your property managers, their payment policy as far as tradespeople are concerned. So if for whatever reason the rent hasn't been paid and a tradesman has to be paid, you ought to have an arrangement where they can withhold some funds each month, a percentage, so there is always an amount of money there that can be used for emergencies if you're finding there are a few issues arising, if the property is getting a little bit older, so the tradespeople can always get paid. So they will then be reimbursed by the tenant in the next month, but you don't want the tradesperson having to wait to be paid. So that issue of timeliness goes on. You know, yes, the rent needs to be paid on time, and the managing agent has to have a system which is firm but fair to keep the tenant on track. And as soon as the rents are in, and ideally they should come in the first week of the month that they are, then transferred by direct deposit into your account, and you receive the statement advising that. As I said, even with maintenance, yes, you can respond to day-to-day things, but a good property manager will provide you with a preventative maintenance schedule. So in other words, they'll say, look, certain things need to be attended to over the next 3 to 5 years. We suggest you stagger it so that they don't all have to be done at once. In other words, there may be an overhaul of the air conditioning or a boiler or something like that. Now, sometimes you can preserve the life of it by just progressively replacing certain parts. So over a 3-year period, you may effectively almost replace the whole unit. Now, if you do it and wait until it does require replacement, that becomes a capital item. So by undertaking preventative maintenance on a progressive basis, you split it over several financial years, and therefore it becomes deductible. Now, these may well not be expenses that you can pass on to the tenant, but again, if it's done as preventative maintenance and clearly not a capital item, there's a fair chance that you will be able to from your tenant if the lease provides for maintenance to be recovered from the tenant. So then becomes budgetable from a cash flow point of view. And as I said, if you can't recoup it from the tenants, which in most cases you will, at least then it is tax deductible and not treated as a capital item. But also in part and parcel, that is that you're getting your property inspected on a regular basis. Probably the next thing strategy-wise that you get advice from your property manager. You know, as I said, well in advance of what's happening, all things are diarised as far as lease expiries, rent reviews, etc. But also things like every 4 years the council revalues the property for rating purposes. Now, it's council rates, water rates and land tax that are all based upon the council valuations. Now, you have the right to object to those. And again, your property manager will look at them, compare them with other properties, and will advise you whether or not you should lodge an objection or whether the rating valuation is reasonable. While we're on statutory things, you've got the compliance that you've got to do with the essential services. And I know we've probably touched on this in the past, but you need to be across all that. And it's not something you can just read up on. I mean, the statutory changes occur regularly, not essential services has been in for a while, but they make little tweaks to it. And you have to comply with the essential, or your building does, comply with the essential services regulations. And a top property manager will be on top of that, have a program for regular checking and rectification of any problems. And then finally, you know, I always say to people that when you buy a property, if it's not in tip-top condition, whatever you want to do, whether you're going to subdivide it or just trick it up, and you can't do major works in the first 12 months, but you can make sure that you can do regular maintenance and set up programs to, at the end of the first 12 months, have your building in ready-to-sell condition. Now, I'm not suggesting for a moment that you turn it over in 12 months, but as I said, if you're going to subdivide it, have the plan organised, even if the titles haven't issued within the 12 months, everything is done so that down the track, if it's 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is, that all you have to do is engage an agent to sell the property and start the marketing campaign. There isn't a mad rush around to get things done that should have been done, that could have been done, when you had plenty of time to do them. So, as I said, this is where your property manager, a good property manager, can be your best friend and certainly extend your skills, knowledge and time in the ownership and ongoing management of the property.
Tell us some more about the essential services requirements.
Okay, well, the various essential services requirements fall under the building regulations. And look, these will vary from state to state, but in Victoria, this Act was came into being from July 1994, and I imagine that it's mirrored throughout the other states as well. But the objectives were to establish and maintain and improve standards for construction and the maintenance of buildings, and also to facilitate the adoption and efficient application of the uniform building standards and the accreditation of building products. But it, as well as that, it was to enhance the amenity of the buildings and protect the safety and health of people who actually are using the buildings, and also promote the cost-effective construction of buildings and allow for an effective system for issuing building and occupancy permits. So the Act was designed to improve new construction, but also to administer older buildings that were being upgraded, and so therefore provide a better protection for the public using the buildings, whether they be owner-occupied or tenanted. And so that's what the Act is. Then it has the regulations, and this is where it starts to get a bit complicated.
And so what obligations does a landlord actually have?
Well, your responsibilities relate to the occupation by the public of the building and their safety while they do it. So it involves things like the air conditioning, the lifts, the egress, any of those facilities that allow for the or affect the safety of anyone occupying the building. Now, if it is a strata titled building, we have part of a strata titled building, the owner's corporation has to observe as far as the building is concerned, but things like the internal blocking of egress and, you know, the exit signs, if there's, the light's not working on the exit sign, that is a breach of the regulation. So therefore, you're, as a landlord or the building owner's corporation, depending on whether you own the property outright or it's part of the owner's corporation, has to identify and inspect all the essential services and keep them to specific standards and do that on a regular basis. Now, in addition to that, you have to keep hard copies of the records of the inspections on site. So in other words, when the lift people go through, they have to leave details of their inspection. Same with the air conditioning. Any of the other services that are provided there. And then at the end of each year, you have to complete and display the annual essential services report and occupancy permit of for the building. And that has to be signed off by an approved party. So there are specialists that go around and undertake these inspections. And they will report, and depending on what is required, and it's generally if it's a newer building, the building surveyor will specify that the air conditioning has to be serviced, or sorry, the inspection for air conditioning has to be undertaken every 6 months. Sometimes it's 3 months, and that you've got to be careful. I always, with clients, if there's, particularly if it's an upgrade of an older building, and then for the building surveyor is specifying it, I make sure that they don't make it every 3 months, because that's just onerous. It's not necessary. It's not saying the servicing won't be done quarterly, but the actual inspection, 6 months is enough. 12 months is too long, but every 6 months is fine to have the inspection done, which notes if there are any shortcomings. And it generally says that everything is smelling roses except for there's an exit light that's broken, or the tenant has piled boxes in front of the exit door and things like that. And that's where the managing agent steps in and rectifies it, so that by the time the next inspection comes around, those items have been addressed, clarified and signed off on. So, yes, there's 2 6-monthly inspections, but at the end of 12 months, there is a sign-off. Now, buildings constructed before July 1994 are not required to have annual essential services reports. Nevertheless, all the safety systems must be properly operating and maintained. As I said, this includes things like exit signs, paths of exit, etc. So, you know, whether you're required to do an annual report, it's in your best interest to make sure that it complies. But as I said, if you've got older buildings and undertake significant upgrades or renovations, then it does fall under the Act, because those works were done after 1994. Now, while compliance may seem somewhat confusing and onerous, this is something your managing agent will coordinate and look after on your behalf to make sure that you meet all your legal obligations. But what I like to look at, it's a real plus, because you see, if you have everything up to date, it's all schmick. If there were any breaches, they're immediately rectified. But ideally, you have the managing agent has it so that each inspection is a clean bill of health, the annual report is fine. When it comes to sell the building, then you make these available, or the managing agent makes them available to prospective purchasers. It gives them a great feeling of comfort that this has been a well-maintained, well-kept building over its life, and therefore is unlikely to have any problems. Whereas if every so often, looking through the annual reports, they can see that there have been breaches, it's gone a couple of inspections before they've been rectified, it doesn't give it a good look. So as I said, it can be onerous, but with a managing agent, that is not your problem. That's his or her problem. From a marketing point of view, I see it as a real plus and something that you can turn to your advantage.
I guess all of this is something even many existing commercial investors may not understand, or at least fully grasp.
Well, look, while compliance with the Act can be somewhat confusing and at times onerous, it's something a competent managing agent handles every day. And he or she will ensure that you meet all your legal obligations. So the bottom line is, you're better to engage a good managing agent rather than try to muddle through with this on your own.
Well, I thought we had covered everything in earlier podcasts, but I appreciate you now filling in a few of the gaps for our listeners.
I'm glad you found it helpful.